Welcome to Local Talk concerning our COVID-19 response on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Good to get together again to provide facts to our community through Zoom technology and the spoken word. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarbaum, your host for the hour, and my good friend and neighbor Mike Metz of Milford Township and keeper of the Prairie Wind Prairie. Hey, Mike.
Hello, Pat. The sun is lifting off the prairie, so it's not quite as flat this morning.
Okay. And because we are the heart of Iowa, Anna Magnuson, a.k.a. Anna Banana, is here with her heart-to-heart messages from KHOI. Hi, Anna.
Happy Friday, listeners. Happy Friday, everyone.
Okay, so don't go away. We'll look forward to another heart-to-heart message later in the hour. And today through Zoom, we will be joined later in the hour by Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames, with Ron Edwards, Animal Shelter Supervisor. And the weather will be mostly sunny today with a high of 21, and the breeze will have an edge of 6 to 12 miles per hour. Highs in the upper 20s this weekend with a chance of snow Sunday, Monday, and Wednesday next week. It may get above freezing on Wednesday, so it looks like a pretty typical January weather pattern. But now let's welcome Dennis Hart, a master at gathering the news for this week from the pages of the Ames Tribune.
The inauguration of a new president and the ongoing coronavirus pandemic both made big news on the pages of the Ames Tribune this past week. First, the inauguration. Joe Biden was sworn in as the 46th president of the United States on Wednesday in the nation's capital. He called for Americans to unite and confront the challenges facing them, the coronavirus pandemic, economic and political turmoil, and decisions over American leadership. He called it America's Day, Democracy's Day. Biden was sworn in by Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts 2 weeks to the day after a mob violently attacked the Capitol in an effort to keep Biden from winning the official Electoral College count. Biden's vice president made history. Kamala Harris was sworn in as the first woman, the first black American, and the first Asian American to hold that office. Now let's return to our usual chronological look at the week's news from the Trib, starting last Friday, when the paper reported that 61 more people had been confirmed to have the coronavirus in Story County. That brought the total number of cases in the county to 8,543 since the pandemic started. The county's 14-day positivity rate, 10%. The Trib also reported that an Ames man who had caused a fatal Story County crash had received a suspended sentence. Nathaniel Oberhokamp was 17 years old in June of 2019 when his truck struck Nicole Henson's SUV, as Henson and another driver were escorting a horse along the side of a road in a rural part of the county with their vehicle's emergency flashers on. Nicole Henson was killed, and seven others, including her husband, were injured. Oberhokamp pleaded guilty to vehicular homicide and one count of serious injury. Prosecutors gave him a plea deal, a suspended prison sentence of 15 years plus 30 days in jail. At Oberhokamp's court sentencing, Nicole Henson's husband Joe spoke to him, saying in his words, "To say I despise you is an understatement. You've robbed everyone that cared about her." Oberhokamp did not address the court, but his lawyer said he's been very remorseful. There was also a story about the Catholic Worker House that had opened in Ames. It's at 709 Clark Avenue, and it's called the Ames Romero House. Two guests are living there now, and more than a dozen people are on the waiting list to move in. The house provides free lodging, transportation, and job assistance to men who are experiencing homelessness or transitioning from jail time. This is the first Catholic Worker House in the area, but there are seven others across Iowa and 187 in the United States and around the world. And the Trib reported on an Ames-based business that sells crickets. Yes, crickets. It's called Jim and Eat Crickets, and Shelby Smith started it back in 2018. The idea was to provide a sustainable source of cricket-based protein food to retailers. In the early days of her business, she sold crickets at farmers' markets. But then she expanded, building a bigger facility in rural Ames and enlisting the help of contract growers. Now her cricket products are on the shelves at Wheatfield Cooperative here in Ames, as well as at 21 retail stores across the nation, including seven Hy-Vees. In case you're wondering, Jim and Eat's top sellers include smoky barbecue roasted crickets and dill pickle roasted crickets. Saturday's paper reported that 42 more coronavirus cases had been confirmed in Story County. That brought the total number of cases in the county to 8,585. The county's 14-day positivity rate stayed at 10%. There was also word that Iowa National Guard troops would represent part of the 21,000 National Guard members deployed to the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C., to keep things safe after rioters had breached the Capitol 2 weeks earlier. The Iowa National Guard had about 265 soldiers and airmen in Washington. The total National Guard deployment there was about four times the number of American troops in Afghanistan and Iraq combined. That increased security came after a crowd of supporters of former President Trump stormed the U.S. Capitol on January 6th in an effort to interfere with then-President-elect Biden's Electoral College confirmation. Sunday's paper brought word that Wayne Clinton would be the keynote speaker for Story County's 35th annual Martin Luther King Jr. celebration this past Monday evening. Because of the pandemic, it took place via Zoom, the first time it's been held virtually. Instead of live singing and dancing like in years past, Story County students were instructed to reflect on Dr. King's legacy at home. Elementary schools were given educational coloring pages of King, and older students were encouraged to write an essay responding to King's letter from a Birmingham jail. The paper also reported that Ames residents would be able to share what they want a downtown plaza to look like at a city council open forum scheduled to take place last night. Back in November, the council talked about ideas for the nearly $3 million plaza project, including such things as an ice skating rink that could be converted into a splash pad in the summer, food vendors, and a stage for events. The plaza will be built between 5th and 6th Streets across from City Hall, where a public parking lot now sits. The council set a goal of starting construction sometime this year, and an architecture firm has been contracted to design the All Seasons Plaza. And there was word that the Madrid Park Board was seeking community input about what people would like to see done to that city's parks this year and in the future. The town has several parks. Some of the feedback the park board has received so far includes such things as splash pads and swimming pools, wheelchair-accessible playground equipment, improved lighting, play space for toddlers, a dog park, more bicycle racks, and a kid's zip line. Already in the works is a new gazebo and replacement of playground equipment that was damaged in the wind derecho that blew through Iowa last summer. Warm weather has to arrive and more derecho cleanup must take place before any work can get underway. Tuesday's paper brought word that Iowa's three major public universities would extend their ongoing cancellation of study abroad programs at least through August 1st as a consequence of the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. Last spring, Iowa State University, the University of Iowa, and the University of Northern Iowa were all forced to temporarily cancel study abroad programs that thousands of students take part in each year. Between the summer of 2018 and the spring of 2019, before the coronavirus, more than 1,800 Iowa State University students studied outside the United States. There was also word that tourism events in Boone County would not slow down this coming year in spite of the coronavirus. The county's River Valley Festival is scheduled to take place Memorial Day weekend, and the county fair is set for July 15th through the 18th. The Puffer Billy Days event has been moved to the first weekend in August, and the Super Nationals at the Boone Speedway are scheduled for September 6th through the 11th. And there's more. Phase 2 of the Boone County Welcome Train project will get underway this spring. The train was donated by the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad and sits at the intersection of Highway 30 and Story Street in Boone. Phase 2 involves putting in sidewalks, lighting, and a kiosk containing tourist information. And the tourism billboard at that same intersection will be redone. Wednesday's paper reported that one more death from the coronavirus had been confirmed in Story County. That brought to 34 the number of people in the county who have died from the virus. In addition, 73 more cases of the virus were confirmed in the county, bringing that number to 8,658 since the pandemic started. The county's 14-day positivity rate was 9%. The Trib also reported that 22 more coronavirus cases had been confirmed at Iowa State University. That included 16 students and 6 faculty or staff members. And that brought to 2,469 the number of members of the ISU community who have tested positive for the virus since August 1st. And the Trib also reported on the latest coronavirus cases in area school districts. The Ames School District reported fewer than 6 positive cases among students in all the district schools. In Ballard, 6 students in the school district had tested positive, while the Gilbert School District reported 11 students had tested positive. In the Nevada School District, 2 students were said to have tested positive. There was also word that the Ames School Board had voted against returning high school and middle school students to fully in-person learning for the second semester. The board decided to remain in the hybrid model of teaching for the high school and middle school, in which students meet 5 days every 2 weeks. District Superintendent Jenny Reisner had recommended that the board approve 100% in-person learning at the middle and high school, but on a 4-3 vote, the board rejected that. There was also a story about a new business in Nevada. It's called Farmhouse Fuel, and it was created by 3 local businesswomen. They have created a new brand of food, that will be put into dishes wrapped in microwavable containers. The meals are primarily gluten-free and dairy-free, and they can be eaten hot or cold. Thursday's paper, yesterday's, reported, of course, on the inauguration of President Biden. The paper also reported that the coronavirus had claimed another life in Story County. That brought the total number of deaths in the county caused by the virus to 35. In addition, another 38 cases of the virus were confirmed in the county, bringing the total number of infections to 8,696 since the pandemic started. There was also word that the Ames City Council had heard about a $232 million capital improvement plan that outlines city projects over the next 5 years. That includes $110 million for public utilities and $9 million for community enrichment. Among the projects, creating a downtown plaza, road improvements, building the Rose Prairie Neighborhood Park, and a grant program for neighborhood improvement. $21 million would go to SciRide to replace buses and install technology that would give riders the ability to check occupancy before boarding. The council made no final decisions on any of this. And there was word that three longtime employees at the Story City Municipal Electric Utility are retiring. Between them, Doretta Hoffman, Tim Casperson, and Kathy Casperson have 86 years' experience with the utility. And that is your summary of the week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, packing up and heading home now, but planning to come right back here on Monday, when I'll unpack what's been making news all around Iowa. Between now and then, let's make a deal to stay safe and stay healthy as we all make our way through this unsettling and unsettled time.
No, we can't go back to the way we were before we jumped the track. As if this engine wasn't spinning long before the final act, we can't go back. You know the only way is through. It's a call to all the work we have to do. And if you're ready for the reckoning, then sing it out loud. It's not the first time that we've been here, but we'll figure it out. Sometimes the sickness is a gift, so we can make the medicine and be ready for the reckoning.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, for the week in the news, and your passion for your journalistic craft is appreciated so very much. And the music interlude was The Reckoning by Front Company. So I'm sure you're all following the story of our monarch butterflies and how Iowa is such a key component in their journey. So I have a good fortune of checking in with local butterfly expert with Stephanie Shepherd, wildlife diversity biologist for the Department of Natural Resources.
Hello.
Let's talk butterflies.
Always pleased to do that.
Okay. A lot of interest in our pollinators. Stephanie, and maybe a little bit about your background. You're a graduate of Iowa State University?
Yes. I got my master's degree from Iowa State University working on butterflies.
On butterflies, the regal fritillaries, as I recall.
Yes.
A wonderful butterfly of the prairies. And there's been a lot of focus on the monarch butterflies, of course. And where are we at with their status? Have they been declared endangered?
They haven't been declared endangered. The Fish and Wildlife Service in mid-December came to their decision. They've been reviewing the status of the species for the last several years, and they came to the conclusion, based on all the data they've collected as well as the conservation efforts that are currently underway, that the listing of the monarch butterfly was warranted but precluded, meaning that it was not listed, but it becomes a candidate species. So it's still going to be reviewed on an annual basis.
And so often it's the habitat of these endangered species that receives the spotlight. Is that correct?
Yes. State of Iowa is a really important part, and generally the entire northern Midwest. part of the country is a very important breeding area for the species. And in Iowa, we have a conservation strategy in place that was developed by a consortium of lots of different organizations, both conservation and ag business and across the spectrum, that have made an agreement and are making a concerted effort to do a lot of habitat conservation. And then there's also another strategy that covers the entire Midwest, saying that all the states in the upper Midwest are committed to, you know, increasing the amount of habitat and the amount of milkweed and nectar resources for monarchs on the landscape.
So the pollinator category kind of is somewhat broad. What do you like to look for, Stephanie, when you're out? And what is it? How do the pollinators touch your heart?
Well, one thing that I think they're obviously really incredibly important to us as humans, because they perform an incredibly vital service for us. A lot of our crop plants and plants that we enjoy require pollination by a lot of these insect pollinators. So, you know, the butterflies are really flashy and we notice them a lot, but there's also, you know, 400 species of solitary bee that do a lot of pollinating, you know, that are native species, as well as the more noticeable bumblebees and stuff like that. And I just really have enjoyed learning about the diversity of all these species and the fact that they are pretty adaptable, you know, or a lot of the species are, that they will really, they'll go where the habitat is, and they don't need huge landscapes of habitat. So folks, even in urban settings, can really provide habitat for species. And that means that we're all invested in the conservation of the species.
And I presume that's why prairies are such a significant habitat base in providing a continuum of blooming plants. Well, I'd be remiss not to bring up the rusty-patched bumblebee. You mentioned 400 bees. Where does the rusty patch fit into that group of pollinators?
Yeah, the rusty patch is a bumblebee, and it in Iowa we have about 12 species of bumblebee, so it's a fairly small group compared to a lot of the smaller, you know, solitary bees. And it is a species that requires sort of a melding of both forest and prairie open habitat for its entire life cycle. And the thing with bumblebees that kind of puts them at risk is that they have this life cycle that depends on a single queen surviving over winter. So being able to find an overwintering ground, building a nest, and then coming out in the spring and being able to get enough nectar to actually build a nest and start reproducing and building their colony. And everything rides on that one queen bumblebee for the success of each colony. That really makes all the bumblebees have the same life cycle, and it makes them vulnerable. And for the rusty patch, that has kind of a needs a variety of different habitats across its life cycle, you know, that makes it even more so vulnerable. Bumblebees are also, and many of the bees are also susceptible to a number of pathogens and diseases that get passed, you know, a lot of times through nectar plants, just with other bees visiting it. It's like us visiting a bunch of different places and touching things where there could be germs. So they pick up things as they move from flower to flower.
Okay, two questions come to mind. Where does she overwinter? Where does the queen overwinter?
For rusty patch, it's generally underground in woodlands.
Oh, my goodness.
And it could be, you know, also if you had, you know, if there was a big wood pile or a big, you know, a tree on the ground, you know, underneath it. But also, you know, underground is where she spends the winter.
How would you describe, what would we look for in identifying a rusty patch?
Once they're out and about and flying, they are one of the earliest species to start flying. There's about three species, if I'm remembering correctly, that fly really early in the year, so April.
Yeah.
So you're kind of looking for, you know, if you see a gigantic bumblebee in April, it could be a rusty patch.
Okay.
It could be one of these three species. That's reason to take a second look. Other than that, they don't have generally the sort of signature rusty patch that the workers do. So they can be a little bit tricky to identify. But, you know, getting a good picture of one is really helpful. And there's actually, you know, resources like bumblebeewatch.org where you can post pictures and experts review them and identify species.
So the time of the spring and watching for a rusty patch of the workers is worker correct term?
Yeah, during the later in the summer, usually starting in mid-July is when we kind of start seeing, you know, the workers kind of get up to a number that you start seeing them. And they have a really distinctive rusty patch on their abdomen.
Great. Is there anything else before I shift gears here?
I don't think so, except for that they're cool.
Yeah, okay. Well, and I've learned I really love my goldfinch natural resource license plate. I heard there might be a pollinator license plate.
Well, that is really just in the idea stage right now. We are talking about introducing some new designs for the natural resource license plate.
Uh-huh.
And we've thrown around a lot of ideas, but I certainly will be advocating for one that includes pollinators like the Minnesota DNR recently introduced.
Oh, Minnesota has it, so Iowa should follow suit.
It was just really cool, and I think we should do something similar.
Yeah, please keep me in mind if that should come about, if we should have the opportunity to start promoting a pollinators, a natural resource license plate. Well, Stephanie Shepherd, thank you so much for
all you
do for conservation and being a part of Local Talk.
Thank you.
Okay.
And we're back. That was Stephanie Shepherd, obviously talking about pollinators and the rusty-patched bumblebees and natural resource license plates. And Mike Metz, do you have a working experience with Stephanie Shepherd?
You know, it's interesting. You keep referring to me being the keeper of the prairie there in Milford. And Stephanie was one of the earliest of the Iowa State students that did some research. Our prairie was part of one of her research sites for her postgraduate work on pollinators and butterflies. And, you know, I work with other students, various projects, but she's one that it was always a delight to have her come out and chat about the butterflies and things. And you could tell she felt at home in that prairie.
Yeah, what an emissary for the pollinators, Stephanie Shepherd, and to relocate from Virginia. You know, that's where she grew up, but she loves Iowa, and she came back to Iowa for a purpose. And
a good purpose.
Any rough-legged hawks over
your
area?
You know,
I
haven't really seen them in my area specifically, but north and west of both where you and I are located, periodically, there seems to be one that's hanging close to the interstate Dayton Road area that we've seen now and again, but it's infrequent. It must be hanging closer to the tree lines this time of year for some reason.
Yeah, let's learn more about rough-legged hawks. Phenology is recording nature's happenings when they occur. The first firefly of spring or the last monarch butterfly of autumn are noted in a journal for future reference and comparisons from year to year. And as Lee Searles of Marshalltown writes, phenology is the study of natural cycles in the lives of living animals and plants. Today's phenology is about rough-legged hawks. Each winter, Iowans enjoy an influx of hawks from our north. Rough-legged hawks bring the wild of the Arctic tundra to our roadsides and grasslands this time of year. Quite often you will see this aerial predator perched on fence posts low to the ground or hovering face into the wind over their prey of mice, rabbits, or birds. Often rough-legged hawks are perched at consecutive times at predictable spots where they successfully attained a meal previously.
Rough-legged hawks are slightly larger than our red-tailed hawks that stay in Iowa year-round. The best way to tell the difference is the breast and belly of rough-legged hawks are dark, and red-tailed hawks have a white breast with a belly band of dark flecks. If the hawk is facing away from you, the rough-legged have a white area at the base of their tail. The name rough-legged refers to the feathering that extends down the legs to the base of the toes, a healthy adaptation for staying warm in frigid weather. Of our soaring Buteo hawks like red-tailed, red-shouldered, and broad-wing hawks, the rough-legged is the only one tied to cold climates. It nests in the Arctic, mostly in tundra regions, north of the boreal forest. In winter, only a few move farther south than the central United States. Its breeding success on the tundra is often dictated by the population cycles of lemmings, which may provide most of the food for the young. Local populations in the Arctic go up and down, largely as a result of rodent populations there. And overall numbers of rough-legged hawks are apparently healthy, which is likely a result of climate change. The area of the tundra that thaws each summer is enlarging. The expanding region of suitable forage has benefited the lemming populations. And as lemming populations go, so go the rough-legged hawks. Because rough-legged hawks breed in the Arctic, your best bet for finding one near you is to wait until winter. Keep an eye out in open country, looking especially for a large, chunky raptor, hovering while facing into the wind, similar in style to the smaller and daintier American kestrel. Rough-legged hawks perch on fence posts and utility poles, as well as on the ground or in the most slender of treetops, where other large raptors rarely chance sitting. Watch for them on winter road trips, as their bold tail, as well as the black belly patches, can often be clearly seen even at highway speeds. They may be able to see the waist of meadow voles, which is visible in ultraviolet light. Despite a strong affinity for rodents, rough-legged hawks were perceived as a threat to poultry up until the early 20th century. Since they are approachable birds that spend their time in open spaces, they were vulnerable by shooting by farmers. It is illegal to shoot raptors and most other birds under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. According to the Cornell Lab All About Birds, the oldest rough-legged hawk on record, a female, was nearly 18 years when found in Illinois in 1979. And that is our phenology for today about rough-legged hawks. I'm Pat Schlarbaum with KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames. Become a member or find the donate button at khoifm.org. Listening to KHOI Community Radio, and I'm Pat Schlarbaum with co-host Mike Metz and engineer Mike Murphy. So, Mike, what is it that you look for when you're out?
Well, actually, this time of year, I keep my eyes open for what might be moving about, but I think about the critical need for habitat, specifically cover this time of year, because those critters out there, just like us, we need to adapt this weather until spring comes. Food's a little more scarce, so the more habitat that we can provide for our outdoor friends, the better it's going to be. And there's ways you can do that. There's a number of different programs out there, number of different entities you can look into and join to work in that direction. Iowa Natural Heritage, of course, comes to mind, the County Conservation, certainly. Some other groups like The Iowa Prairie Network, for example, is holding their annual meeting in two Saturdays, the last Saturday in January. Yeah. Things like that. This is the time of year. It's kind of like planning your vegetable garden. You do all your planning now for what you're going to try to do to help and promote. Also, be sure to visit with your legislative representatives, because there is there's been movement afoot for years, and we need to continue to remind them that we need to do more.
Thanks for being a strong environmental voice here at KHOI Community Radio. So let's have a little music break, and we'll be right back with Susan Guiasta.
When the truth is thin, gotta shout it out and make it ring again. Once we're finally tired of running from the things we won't admit, we'll start again on a foundation built with trust and a love that's big enough for all of us. And if you're ready for the reckoning, then sing it out loud. It's not the first time that we've been here, but we'll figure it out. Sometimes the sickness is a gift, so we can take the medicine and be ready for the so we can take the medicine and be ready for the reckoning.
And we're back with more local talk. And in our quest to strengthen our community through communication that includes Zoom, let's welcome Susan Guiasta, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames, and her guest today, Ron Edwards. Hi, folks.
Hello. It's good to be here.
Always good to have you with us, Susan. And any announcements for the city?
Well, as you know, we had our Downtown Plaza meeting yesterday. It was an input session. Yeah. For residents to talk about their vision for the one-acre parking lot across the street to the east of City Hall.
Yeah.
It was a very well-attended public meeting, and we used some new technology where you could do online polling and voting, and just a lot of conversation and interest, which is really difficult for a virtual meeting.
Yeah.
Really impressive. The consultants that we worked with, Confluence out of Des Moines, were able to share this technology with us. So that conversation isn't over. That information is still available at cityofames.org/downtownplaza, where you can get details on the plans. And there's even a comment box where you could share some thoughts there. So that was a very successful experience. We're really looking forward to continuing that project and continuing the conversation.
Very exciting project on that 1 acre site to the east of City Hall.
Right.
Right. A nice amenity to downtown, I'm sure.
Yeah. So this morning I thought it would be fun to check back in with Ron Edwards with our Ames Animal Shelter.
Yeah.
We haven't talked with Ron in a while, and there's always things going on at the animal shelter. I just want to put in a shout out. Every morning when I talk with you, I'm petting my dog, which Ron found for me. You often will see me, I know on the radio you don't see me, but I'm often bobbing back and forth because If you have animals at home, you you know what it's like to constantly be giving them attention, and she's loving this time that we're spending with her at home.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really one of the sidelights of our new Zoom reality is all the people's pets that are included in our meeting, in our outreach. How are things going with you, Mr. Edwards?
It's going really well. We're continuing to see quite a few adoptions, a lot of great applications coming in online through our online process, and still getting, you know, really good people coming in to adopt our pets. Now, we still continue to been able to help the Story County shelter because we've had so many adoptions. We've been able to take in more animals from the Story County shelter, which just has an overabundance of cats and dogs. So it's nice to partner with them and help them out.
Is there an increasing trend, or how does it compare to previous years?
Sure. Our numbers, since the COVID crisis, our number impound numbers have been down. So we're seeing animals being adopted quickly and quicker than previous years, but we're seeing fewer animals coming in. So when we do have periods of few animals at the shelter, then that's when we reach out to our shelter partners and see what we can do to help them out. But having fewer animals in shelters is really kind of something that's happening throughout the United States. It's not just here in Ames or in Iowa.
Interesting that would be a trend. People are hanging on or finding or networking among their neighborhood, possibly.
Yeah, I think they're just being, you know, probably hopefully a little bit more responsible, and they're keeping their pets at home and indoors and safe with them. Of course, with our Iowa weather, it's always best to have your pets indoors with you. It's far too cold out there to leave them outside roaming around in the city. So, and that's not allowed anyways.
Yeah.
Always good to have them at home safe with people. And so I think maybe people are just a little bit more aware, but I've seen this throughout my career. We tend to see, you know, more and more responsible pet ownership and where these are part of our family. You know, these really are family members to us, and we care for them in that manner. And they're not just pets that you give away after a few years.
Yeah, if there could be something of merit concerning our COVID-19 response, it would be enhanced responsibility, not only to our pets, but to our neighbors.
Absolutely.
You mentioned your contact, a website, or if people wanted to donate or learn more about your animal shelter activities, where would they find that information?
Sure. AmesAnimalShelter.org. So that is on the city's website. You can also reach it through cityofames.org, of course. But AmesAnimalShelter.org will take you directly to our homepage. On there, you can see various links to donate to the shelter. If you're looking for your lost pet, you know, maybe Fido escaped somehow and you want to see if he's at the shelter, we have a picture of every animal that's at the shelter on our website. So you can look for animals to adopt, find your lost pets, report a pet that's missing. Quite a few links on there. And one thing that I wanted to make sure I mentioned today was our statistical data. We just finished our 2020 data. All of that is now posted online. There's graphs for people that like to see more of the graph type statistics. We have all of the data. And again, one thing that is so, so important to me is that we count every single beating heart that comes into our facility. So there's no tricky math going on. It's really just every single animal that we're caring for. It's on our website.
And you mentioned your partnership with the Story County facility there in Nevada. Now, how did that come about, or what's really driving that, the strength of that partnership?
Sure. The fortunately, the shelter has a new director, and Anna Henderson is just a wonderful person who is just going to be an amazing person for that shelter, and I think take it into a new era. Quite honestly, she's committed to finding homes for pets, getting them out of the shelter, looking at her data just as we do every single day, trying to figure out, you know, how long animals are staying in shelters. Why are they staying there so long, and how can we get them out there sooner?
I see. Yeah, that's really important points that you're making. How does the future look for the animal shelter
You know, we've been through a process over the last few years, honestly, to review our facility. For those of you who've been to the shelter, you know it's a very small facility. There's times during the summer months when we have more animals coming in that we are absolutely at capacity. And so we've got to address that. And the city recognizes that, and city management and the police department, which we are under. So we've done a feasibility study, and what came out from that was that eventually we're going to have to build a new facility. So those are all still, it's in the works. It's obviously going to be a huge undertaking, but I think it's the best thing for our community, for the animals and the people that we serve here in Ames.
Well, we're a progressive community, and it would be appropriate to ensure that a major part of our home life and community life are our pets. Where are you located?
Sure. We're in South Ames, kind of over near the Lowe's off of South Duff area and the fire station at 325 Billy Sunday Road. So we're just right down the street from the dog park for those, you know, that go to the dog park and enjoy that great facility. They pass the shelter up on their way down there.
Sure enough.
One of the things that I think the animal shelter is great for doing is educating people not only about pets, but also about wildlife. Now, I know we're still a couple months from spring, but spring seems to be a difficult time for people to understand that wildlife has its own way of taking care of its young. And I know that Ron gets a lot of calls in the coming months just about concerns about the animals outside. I wonder if you could just remind people of what they should and shouldn't do.
Sure. You know, Ames has an abundance of wildlife, and just honestly, they're everywhere. And the best thing to do is honestly enjoy them. Look at watch them, take pictures of them, but leave them alone. That is absolutely the best response. We oftentimes have people calling us, especially during the spring months when the babies are being born, that, you know, the moms of them, the baby bunnies, and you know, that's not actually how that works. They don't abandon them. They only come back to feed them a few times a day. So there's just a ton of information about wildlife, and the Humane Society of the United States, hsus.org, is a really good organization that has lots of information about all different types of wildlife. Eventually, we're going to have more of that information on our website. That's a work in progress, but really just enjoy them from afar. And if we do need to intervene, call us there at the animal shelter. We're there to help and respond in situations where animals might be sick, injured, things like that, whether it's wildlife, domestic animals, anything animals, give us a call.
Yeah, anything animal related. You know, in the back of my mind, I thought to make sure that I brought that up closer to the spring. But it is a message that always needs to be voiced. And Mike, do you have a question?
Well, I just had a comment. I think Susan is right on track, because next Tuesday we're going to be visiting with Marlene Ehrsman about rehabilitation of wildlife. So.
Yeah, we have the good fortune of the Iowa Wildlife Center that hopefully can initiate and shoulder some of that responsibility. And I guess on Tuesday here on Local Talk, we're going to include program that has Marlene Ehrsman and the Iowa Wildlife Center. That's something that such a important message to always keep on the forefront. Wildlife do not make good pets, and they have their own strategy for survival. And some often people feel that wildlife is being abandoned and need to intervene, but always better to stay at arm's length and respect their need for maintaining their livelihood. So,
I have a question. So I have to ask Mr. Edwards, because I did go to the website, and Zelda and Ginger, can you talk about Zelda and Ginger, who need to stay together and find a home?
Zelda and Ginger is two very bonded guinea pigs. They just recently came to us. The owner surrendered them because they could no longer care for them. But they're just a beautiful guinea pig that need a home together. It's always very, very important to keep guinea pigs together. We just had two sets of guinea pigs adopted last week. So these guys are just recent arrivals and just beautiful creatures. And they're easy to care for. There's so much information about how to care for them properly and the different food that they get the salad every day that's, you know, has cilantro and different greens and things, because vitamin C is important to their survival. So Just really fun little creatures to have there at the shelter.
So if my brother is listening, there are 2 guinea pigs that your girls could have just today.
I love it. Let's get a home for those guinea pigs. Well, it's getting closer to our Anna Banana segue, but is there anything else that comes to mind?
Well, I have a question again for Mr. Edwards. So it's going to be 10 degrees, and so should I walk my dog for a half hour or only 2 minutes at a time? What do you think?
You know, I think limiting the walks during this cold period, one thing you have to be really careful is a lot of people are using the ice melt, and a lot of that is very harmful to pets' paws if it stays on there. So no matter how much time you're taking for a walk, when you come back in, you want to make sure that you're really wiping down those paws, because some of that salt can really cause problems and burns to the pads of pups. So they do make pet safe salt that you can use, ice melt, but it's a little bit more expensive, so people tend to use the other stuff that's not as safe. So anywhere around the shelter, we use the pet safe product, but sometimes in home environments, they're not using those. So just want to be careful a lot of times too, you can just get that same exercise too, just playing inside the house. You know, some houses are not big enough to throw a ball inside, but just getting them and loving on them. That's so important. That exercise and giving them that love and attention is so, so important to their well-being.
Yes, it is. Those are really good points to make. In a previous life, decades ago, I was involved with sled dogging and a lot of the huskies then would have the little booties. And it's not every dog that would welcome those additions, but it's probably worth a try. It's better than having them be inundated with bad chemicals. Yeah. So thank
you. Absolutely.
So thank you so much. Thanks for including Floyd, Miss Anna. Yeah, Floyd is her beautiful little...
Yes, he's a Local Talk fan.
He is a Local Talk fan, yes, indeed. Well, thanks for bringing your animal world to us, Mr. Edwards.
Thank you.
Yeah, have a good weekend, Susan. Thank you so much. And Miss Anna, you seem to be primed and ready to include a heart-to-heart message. Let's have Anna Banana.
Well, I do always enjoy it when they bring the Mr. Edwards or onto the Local Talk show, because I'm always curious to see what animals are up for adoption. But it's a little bit dangerous just because when you go to that website, you kind of want to adopt them all. So I think okay. Since you guys live in farmland, I'm going to go adopt them and bring them all to your houses.
Oh, okay. We have the facilities. What a strategy. What a great idea. And I must look like I need guinea pigs in my life.
Well, they're awfully cute.
They're awfully cute. Yes.
Yeah, Zelda and Ginger. Well, as we talk about these winter months and as these winter days and the cold days ahead, we actually get to close our week with Carol Puckrose. We started our week with Carol's poem, and then we get to end with Carol's message. And if you remember, Carol Puckrose is the co-founder and artistic director of The Boathouse. And she provides a poem and message that's delivered from London to Ames, Iowa. So Carol's heart-to-heart message to introduce this week's poem is the following. I chose Wordsworth's Daffodils poem, I Wandered Lonely as a Cloud, by William Wordsworth. It was a sunny day, and I had bought a bunch of early daffodils in a little still open flower shop on a socially distanced walk with my daughter. We both bought tulips, too. As we soaked up the winter sun, there was a smell of spring in the air, and with it, the hope of new life. I had spent the last week addicted to the American news as it unfolded. If it wasn't so serious, it was as compelling as a movie. So this walk was literally a breather, grounded once again in the simplicity of the moment. So when I got home, I put my daffodils in a vase on my desk and just looked at them and felt joy. So the obvious place to return was to the beautiful Wordsworth poem that so many people learn by heart at school in past eras. The poem's vibrancy and beauty filtered through the ether and gave pause in the world that is so challenging right now. And with love, that's from Carol's message. And here's her poem. I Wandered Lonely as a Cloud, by William Wordsworth. I wander lonely as a cloud that floats on high o'er vales and hills, when all at once I saw a crowd, a host of golden daffodils, beside the lake, beneath the trees, fluttering and dancing in the breeze. Continuous as the stars that shine and twinkle on the Milky Way, they stretched a never-ending line along the margin of a bay. 10,000 saw I at a glance, tossing their heads in sprightly dance. The waves beside them danced, but they outdid the sparkling waves in glee. A poet could not but be gay. In such a jocund company, I gazed and gazed, but little thought what wealth the show to me had brought. For oft when on my couch I lie, in vacant or in pensive mood, they flash upon that inward eye, which is the bliss of solitude, and then my heart with pleasure fills and dances with the daffodils. So thank you, Carol, for your poem and your message and that little bit of joy that is daffodils and spring. Wouldn't you say that, Pat?
Absolutely. Warming thoughts for a January day.
Yes. And I think that Carol would be willing to come on a Zoom and read her poem in person and with that lovely accent that would just enhance it rather than me read it. So we'll have to bring Carol on, don't you think?
By all means. Does she live in England?
She does live in England, but I think she'd be willing to come on.
Okay, so whatever the time lag difference is there, maybe four or five hours.
Six hours,
okay.
Yep. So we will bring Carol on in person because, again, there's nothing like an accent reading a William Wordsworth poem. So we'll do a redo, eh?
Oh, it's been something I always look forward to Ms. Puckrose's work and being included on these Fridays of Local Talk.
Yes. Well, I guess it is getting time for Anna Banana to split, unless you would like for me to read one more heart-to-heart message, which I do have in store, but you let me know,
Pat.
Oh,
could you please? Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. All right, I have a great one. So speaking of England, I'm part of a group where I actually have to get up at 4 a.m. to join this group, but it's worth it.
Oh, that's dedication.
Yeah, well, again, I am a sucker for an accent, so I will get up at 4 a.m. and listen to the other group talk. But this is from one of the members of the group, and she is named Brenda Hurley, and we were talking about dandelions, speaking of daffodils, yellow flower, to going to dandelions, and how some people think that they're weeds. And I love them, and as does Brenda, and she sent me this poem and this message. So this is from Brenda. Hi, because you, like me, like dandelions, I thought I'd share this poem I wrote. I hope you enjoy the sense of it, though not perfect. Love, Brenda. Time standing still in decorative white, the head of delicate seed, waits to fly into the light, not valued, only a weed. The color of its flower just a day ago was the color of butter and gold. The tiny petals like sunshine stand, a pleasure to behold. The dandy of the common land decorating the emerald field, its serrated leaf like a sword guards the stem holding the tiny seeds. Day turns to night, then into day. The weed has changed its gown from a golden head to a white lace strands, a gossamer orb, a delicate crown. Across the meadow, a breath of wind stirs and lifts the seeds from their birth. The wait is over, free at last they fly and spread over God's good earth. The sphere has let its bounty go. The seeds are on their way to spread and root and multiply. The dandelion has its day. Now, Brenda, I have to tell you, I love that poem. And even though you thought it was not perfect, I think it's perfection. Don't you, Pat?
It's a pleasure to behold.
Absolutely.
A gossamer orb. That was beautiful.
Yes.
Let her know. We really appreciate that. Well, thank you so much, Anna Banana, for your welcome installment of KHOI's Heart to Heart Messages.
Yes, it nearly is now time for Anna Banana to split. And so for this weekend, I hope all that your days are connected to a community of love, care, and support. That is KHOI, the heart of Iowa, which is you and me. So back to you, Pat.
Thank you, Anna Banana.
Well, you know, Pat, I've got to make a comment to Anna. She must enjoy breakfast with her sliced bananas on her Rice Krispies or cornflakes because it's the Cavendish brand and it has somewhat of a British lilt. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. on Friday at KHOI-FM at 89.1. And remember to support this station financially when you go to the website at khoifm.org. You'll find the mustard yellow donate button there. Please click on that and follow the prompts. The views of KHOI's guests do not necessarily reflect the views of KHOI. This is nonprofit, nonpartisan media. We do provide a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information.
And remember that you can hear this program online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. Yes, tell your friends far and wide, KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. This program is engineered by Mike Murphy. Thank you, Michael. And thank you, Local Talk producers Ursula Rudenberg and Lynn Carey. And thank you, Dennis Hart, with your wonderful Friday report. And thanks to our guests, Stephanie Shepherd, Susan Guiazda, Ron Edwards. And thank you, Mike Metz and Anna Magnuson. I've been your host, Pat Schlarbaum.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other artists you heard was Front Company, The Reckoning. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. So if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team. Remember, you, the listener, what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and
see you again on the radio.